Blog Talk Radio.
I'm
Diana Ross, the boss, I'm coming out. And this is your host, Gail Delicious Johnson. Welcome to another episode of Delicious Talk. Well, this week has been a little bit rough for me. Monday, I went to have a mammogram. And I'm telling you, it hurt. This was the worst time I've ever had a mammogram. The pain that this woman put on me. Now, don't get me wrong. She was a nice technician, as nice as she could be, but she was just too rough. It was as she may have just gotten out of school or something, but I'm not sure. Well, men, they don't know about mammograms, but women who ever had a mammogram, you know how they do it in three dimensions, move your breast this way, that way, stand, you know, still, this, that. Well, she was pulling on it to get it on the table, like whatever that little thing is. And she kept pulling it, and I could feel my, you know, feeling like it was detaching from my chest. So I said, ow, like that. So she said, oh, I'm sorry. It'll be over within a minute, you know. Hopefully that they can invent something that it won't be so painful, you know, blah, 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 blah. Now, I'm used to the mashing. I can get used to that, but that was excruciating pain. And so anyway, when she finished, you know, I put my bra on and everything, came home, sitting in the office, and I noticed something was wet, and I felt under my breast, and it was like, you know, strange, you know, it was really wet. So I looked, and it looked like I had been sliced. I said, oh, my goodness, both of my breasts sliced from a mammogram. And I get these every year, mind you. So I'm really kind of being apprehensive of next year, but I know it has to be done. And hopefully I will invent something so it won't be so uncomfortable for women's breasts, especially, I don't know if I'm the first one that ever experienced that or if someone else may have experienced it, but it's not a good feeling. It's really not. So I put some Neosporin under there, and it's been a little bit better. It's getting better, but that was a little rough experience that I experienced on Monday. Wednesday was my family reunion, the Johnson's family reunion. They have it every 4th of July, whatever day the 4th of July falls on, they have it in the park, Rock Creek Park on Candy Cane Lane. I didn't go because it was extremely hot that day. And when I'm out in the heat, it literally makes me sick if I'm out in it too long. And, you know, basically they're sitting out, not in the sun, but, you know, it was just so hot. It was almost 104 degrees or something like that particular day. Now, I have a little hoopty, has no air in it at all. None. And I really couldn't see me driving from my house, I live in Capitol Heights, Maryland, all the way up to Candy Cane Lane. It's basically in Silver Springs, Maryland, if anybody's familiar with that area. But I just couldn't get in my car and drive up there. Didn't get out of the car and have no type of relief. You see what I'm saying? Because if I drive my car around here, I can get out and come in the house. It's nice and cool in here. It feels so good in my house. Woo! And we had this thunderstorm. I think that was last Friday. Electricity went out. I couldn't do my last week's show. So this show is the show that I was going to do last week. But anyway, the electricity went out, and I was just praying, God, please let the electricity come back on, because I knew that it would get hot in here, and it would be nowhere for me to go because everybody else's electricity was off. So God was good. It was out for maybe a good half hour to 45 minutes, and it came back on. And it's been on ever since, and some people just getting their electricity back on. And, you know, I really felt bad for people who had to suffer, lose their food. And they declared the District of Columbia disaster area. No, state of emergency. So anybody who was affected by the storm could get government assistance. My sister lost all her food. She lives in D.C. But that's that. We're going to get on with this show because, like I said, it's from last week, young lady. Is coming on. She was born and raised in Tuskegee, Alabama. She has three beautiful children and a husband who keeps her grounded. She enjoys promoting her literary works, producing plays, and assisting new authors in getting started in the publishing business and every aspect of life. She loves what she does and is blessed and finally walk with purpose. Her favorite quote is, "If you have built castles in the air, your work need not be lost. That is where they should be. Now put foundations under them." And before I bring Shanae Dowdell, I hope I'm pronouncing her last name correctly. Before I bring her on, I'm going to bring on my co-host, Rhea.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fantastic. And yourself?
I'm good, thank you.
How's the weather up there?
Girl, they're cooking it, and I'm already well done. Today we got up to 104.
Oh, my God.
As the regular temperature, but our index was in the, you know, up in the teens. Our heat index. This is day three for us. We thought we were going to get some relief tomorrow. Well, earlier during the day, now they're saying that it won't be until late tomorrow evening. We'll have another day in the triple digits tomorrow.
Wow. Well, stay in and be as cool as you can be and drink plenty of water and, you know, just.
Definitely.
Huh?
I said most definitely.
Yeah, because I like talking to you, not about you, darling. With that being said, we're going to bring in this evening's guest. Hello, Shanae.
Hello, how are you doing?
I am fantastic, and yourself?
I'm doing good. Doing very good. I'm glad to be on this week.
Good, yeah, because last week was, I mean, it was just a total disaster. Everything went out.
Sorry
it
to
seemed
hear
like
that.
It went out at about 10:45. And I was saying, God, I hope it comes back on. But it didn't. It came on maybe at about 11:30, something like that. But it did come back on, and I was just so grateful for that, you know. But here
yeah.
we are now. So let's find out what Shanae has been up to. Did I pronounce your last name correctly?
Yes, and you said the first name correct, too. A lot
oh,
of people
okay.
Will call me Shanny because of the way it's spelled, but it's Shanae. Yeah, my
yeah.
last name is Dowdell, Shanae Green Dowdell, right. And I haven't been up to too much, I don't think.
Mm-hmm. Well,
no,
you,
seriously.
Yeah, just give us a little bit about what's been going on way back there. You know, when did you
okay.
Start writing and, you know, stuff like that?
Okay, well, I started writing, it had to be back in 2005. I had done a few poems and different things like that before then, but it wasn't until 2005 that I really got serious and sat down and, you know, started my first manuscript for a novel. And what inspired me to start my first manuscript was just reading so many great novels. I mean,
mm-hmm.
reading inspires writers. And
right.
so And being reading is my first love, but in being so in tune with all the different stories, I was like, you know what, I believe I have a story inside of me. And so I sat down and started writing my first book, Keeping It Tight. And from there, went on to compile an anthology.
Mm-hmm.
And but Keeping It Tight was inspired basically about interracial relationships. At that time in 2005, I could say from 2005 until now, we've evolved a lot as far as, you know, not being so concerned with other people in their relationships and, you know, whether or not the kids are going to be mixed, you know, black. Just that whole interracial thing is kind of toned down a little bit from over the past 7 years from
mm-hmm.
the time that I started writing that book until now. But that was the reason why I wanted to write a story about an interracial relationship, and Keeping It Tight is what came of that.
Okay, did you self-publish that book, or did you have a publisher?
Yes, I actually self-published the book. I started off through Lulu.com,
mm-hmm.
And I'm sure you're probably familiar with Lou Lewis. One of the first things I realized was how easy it was to get the book published through them, as far as after I got it edited and everything like that. But using their system was very easy. But one of the downfalls I had was that the books cost so much for me to get a copy. So immediately I realized that I was going to have to go another route with publishing if I wanted to be in, to have any sort of success with it. So that's when I took the book and got it printed through a printer and, you know, started distributing and selling the book myself.
What made you self-publish opposed to looking for a publisher?
I guess I just had read so many stories about people who had, you know, submitted, got rejection letters. You had to have a query letter. You had to have so many things. And I guess I was just overwhelmed with the whole process of getting the agent, getting a publisher, that I decided that it would be best for me to just go the independent route.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So in your second book, you said it was an anthology. What was that?
The Mocha Chocolate. Taste mm-hmm. a Piece of Ecstasy. And, yeah, that's an anthology that was compiled. It has 17 different authors in there, including myself. And I just put a call out for authors who would be interested in contributing to an anthology. And this was after being a part of another anthology, The Erogenous Zone, which was compiled by Jessica Tillis.
Mm-hmm. So this is a book of erotic short stories?
Yes, very erotic short stories. And the weird thing is it was inspired by coffee, you know, because I love coffee. I'm actually sipping some right now. I love coffee. And so I was on, I think it was iStock Photo, looking through different stock images to find a cover for a book that I was working on, and I saw this lady sitting inside of a coffee cup. And the first thing I thought was Taste a Piece of Ecstasy. It's so, you know, that just sounds so sexy. And then Mocha Chocolate came after that. And then I asked people, you know, if they would like to submit to it, got some good submissions, and went on and did some great things with that book.
So how many, you said you had 17 authors to do a submission on it?
Well, I had more than that, but 17 were chosen. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So how did they get chosen?
Just basically, if their story fit into, you know, erotica, not hardcore, but just something that, you know, spoke to your soul and emotions and not just sex, stories that had good storylines, authors who seemed to have great energy and easy to work with, those were the type of people that I tried to choose and work with.
Are you still have any of those authors with you now?
One of them, I mean, I'm still in contact with a lot of them, and some of them haven't written, you know, anything else since the anthology. But one of them, in particular, Naya Moore, she's working with me now. I published her first book. She has other books out, but I published Guilty Pleasures, one of her novels, and looking to publish another book by her called Bittersweet Exes.
Oh, okay. So you do, how long have you had your publishing company? And what inspired you to start a publishing company of your own?
Well, I've only started publishing other authors since last December. That was the first time I, you know, took it upon myself to publish another author. And the reason is because I just hate to see people get screwed and, you know, not get the money or even stop writing because they can't find, you know, that they may not necessarily be able to take on all of the independent things that they need to do to publish their own books, but they may be looking for somebody who's trustworthy, who will pay them for books that they actually sell, and, you know, just people that's easy to work with. And so I just hate to see people get screwed over and, you know, at the same time looking for different avenues to keep income coming into my business.
Right.
A couple of the reasons.
Right. So you published just the book for Nina Moore. Have you published any other authors?
No, I have several submissions that I've been looking over, but I haven't done anything else. I have one that I offered, you know, made an offer on, but no, I just try not to do a whole lot because a lot of the big work that I do is just me. I have a little help with the I shouldn't say a little help, but as far as with the technical part and the paperwork, you know, all that, that's typically me. So I try not to take on too much. And so, you know, typically I think what would be good for me is maybe one or two authors, you know, a year.
Right.
Or one or two titles a year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because I like to give people a good run for the money on their titles. I wouldn't want to, you know, take on 10 of them and then not be able to give them all the good attention that they need.
Right. That is so true because I found out dealing with my publisher was, you know, doing everything, and she ran into problems because she was trying to service too many people at the same time. And, you know, since I've had my company, I'm working with one author at this particular time, but I do have some potentials, and I do have a manuscript that I'm working on as well for another young lady. But I don't want to get overwhelmed. I do have a team, you know, working with me, but it's still going to be overwhelming because it has to come through me first. And, you know, I understand exactly, you know, what you mean. You have to take your time if you want to, you know, want people to use your services. You don't want to be overwhelmed.
Right. And it may seem that you're just not able to do more, but yeah, I could do a lot more. But the thing is, you want to make sure that you give each person some time and attention. You don't want to have 20 authors and then maybe only two of them are successful because you don't have time to even touch all of those novels and go out and promote and do all, you know.
Right.
It's just, it can get too overwhelming, at least for me. I can't speak
right.
for anybody else.
Right. Well, that's anybody who doesn't, you know, who basically, like you said, you're basically doing everything. And, you know, even myself, even though I do have a team, it's still, like I said, it comes to me first. Because I did read one young lady's manuscript. It took me 3 days to read it. I would have done it sooner, but I was proofreading it while I was reading it and doing a few corrections on it. And this is when I first started. So, getting to learn to know what to do and how to do things is still a process that I'm going through as well because I don't know if you do it or not, but do you charge a viewing fee?
No, I typically, well, I have before, like when I did a publishing workshop and I had people send in their manuscripts and I charged them like $25 to review them and give them a one-page feedback on it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way I charge, but I don't like charge. I really just, to be honest with you, Gail, I really just don't like to read a whole lot of manuscripts.
Right,
I can read maybe, you know, if somebody submitted something for me, if they can't get my attention in those first three pages, I'm not going through the whole thing.
Right.
Now, if it's a friend and they ask me to look it over, then I'll do my best to read as much as I can. But I just, you know, it's got to really be captivating or something for me to just go and read the whole thing.
Right. And then, I charge a viewing fee, and what happens when it's non-refundable, but if they use my company, it goes towards whatever package that they choose. I had three packages, gold, silver, and platinum, and that money will go towards whatever package they use, but it's non-refundable because, you know, that takes time to, you know, read those manuscripts. Whether you read them all the way through or not, you still will have to read them to the point where you know whether or not you're going to receive them. So that is time, you know, and the very first one that I did for this young lady, when I sent it back to her, I should have charged her then, but then she comes up with the fact, well, I don't have any money right now and blah, 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 you know, this and that. But, you know, like I said, it's a learning process and, you know, everything is coming, you know, into play for me and I'm getting
together.
Was that
after you gave her the feedback? You already had given her feedback and she didn't have any money?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And see, that's because I was just, you know, starting out being green, but, you know, mm-hmm. I've you know, I'm learning as I go along. So, you know, if someone submits a manuscript, there is a charge, and it's known that, you know, whether they use my service or not, the money that they sent for the viewing is non-refundable. That's,
right.
You know, printed in my website. My website is up, everybody out there who's listening, jjpublishing.com. So visit it, comment on it, and leave remarks or whatever. But, yeah, so, you know, it's a whole learning process. And I notice a lot of people are coming up with, you know, their publishing companies. Now, I started my publishing company solely for myself. But when I was, you know, talking to different people, you know, they were asking me, was I going to, you know, was I going to publish anybody's books? And I thought about it for a minute, and I said, well, that'll be a challenge, because I'm always up for a challenge, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I said yes, and right now I'm ghostwriting a book for a local actor here. And like I said, I have another girl's manuscript that's, you know, on the table, but she's getting things together right now. And, you know, I'm just taking it, you know, these two are the only two I think I'm going to deal with for right now, because, like, I don't want to get overwhelmed. I really don't.
Right.
And, you know, like I said, it was basically a company that was started for me because I went through some changes with my publisher. And I was, you know, out there. And I said, who in the world can I trust? Who can I go to? You know, because I had a couple other books that I wanted to get out before the year was out. And I just said to myself, hey, I can do it myself. You know, so with faith and prayers, girl, I started it without a dime. You know, so, you know, that's just it. You know, but in the next few years, I'm going to be up there with Simon and Schuster or, you know, maybe even higher than them. You know, that's,
right.
That's the confidence that I'm carrying for myself, you know. But, yeah, so I understand that. Now, let's talk about Secrets of a Kept Woman.
Yes.
What was that all about? And also, I know you turned that into a stage play.
Right. Now, this is the part where I get excited, because Secrets of a Kept Woman is it's my second book. And I wrote this story just kind of, the first one I had some thoughts in mind, like some social things that were going on. But on this book, I just wrote this book because it was fun to write. And when I wrote each character, I tried to get completely into that character's mind and make them, you know, absolutely opposite and different from each other, so that, you know, when you read one, they didn't say the same things, they didn't do the same things, they didn't act the same way. And this story is about three women who've been best friends since they were kids, and one of them has a secret and has something to do with the other one's husband. So there's a lot of drama. There's also some comedy going on in the book. And it's some gangster stuff, you know. It's like some, one of them is a drug dealer, and his street life, even though he tries not to bring it home, it just keeps following him home. And, you know, there's like shootings and, you know, arrest, and everything is going on. It's just so much going on, but not too much where the reader would get confused. It's a drama. It's a comedic drama. Now this book,
okay.
I did
go on.
No,
go
you
on,
go
I'm sorry. No, go on.
This
you,
book,
go on.
I did turn it into a play, and we had our first viewing here in Opelika, Alabama. Well, actually in Auburn, Alabama, last year in March, and we had about 800 guests roughly come out to the show.
Wow.
Yeah, you talk about pressure on your first show. I didn't have that Tyler Perry story. I kept going out there, and there was one or two people in the audience. I could have probably dealt with that, you know, because you feel like, well, it's only three of them out there. If we bomb, not too many people know, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, we had an audience. It was a lot of support from the community, and people came, friends and family came from all around to see the show. And we got pretty good rave reviews. The acting was on point, and the message was delivered. And as a playwright, it's kind of, I guess it's the same as an author. You know, if we sit there and we wait for our first good review, We want people to receive what we have put out. And so I was waiting on, you know, that first laugh, that first, ooh, ah, oh, whatever, you know, as I stood backstage. And it was almost like I was waiting without breathing. I was just standing there going, if they don't laugh, if they don't say something. So about 5 or 10 minutes into the show, I heard people go, oh, like, wow, they couldn't understand what was, I mean, they couldn't believe what was happening. And so then when the comedy came and people started laughing, I was really, really feeling it. And I was like, okay, I can relax and help out with what's going on backstage. So it's
wow.
A really exciting experience to put on a play. And with that said, we're looking to go back out. I took some time off from the play. I bought a house and just not from the play.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. For those listening, some people might think, oh, she did one play and went and bought a house. No.
That would be nice, though, if it did happen like that.
I could, actually, financial-wise, the play just broke even.
Mm-hmm.
I took some time off, bought a house, you know, had spent time with my family and everything, and didn't do much with it this year, but I've decided in the last couple of months that I want to go back out, take the play on the road, and being a part of the Black Writers and Book Club Conference that Sheila Lipsey is putting on in Memphis, Tennessee, September the 14th and 13th, I reached out to her and so I asked her would it be, you know, feasible for us to put the play on during that conference, and she agreed, and she's been very helpful with getting everything set up so that we can do the play during that weekend.
Oh,
and,
wow.
We've also been selected by the Atlanta Black Theater Festival to be one of the plays that play, is 40 plays going on in 4 days. From October the 4th through the 7th. So the Secrets of a Kept Woman stage play will be performed during those days as well. So it's a lot of great things going on with it. And I want to thank you for going on and making a pledge on the Kickstarter project that we have on Kickstarter.com.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome.
Thank you,
you know, because I try to support, you know, people who, you know, who are really doing something, you know, things that I like, because I do love plays. I love plays. And also, you have this on DVD as well, don't you?
Well, I had it on DVD, but then I realized that in the first play, we ordered a person here locally to come in and record the play. You know, this is one of those rookie mistakes that I made. I just thought, well, you know, if I get somebody who said they can hit it with two angles and edit it when they get it back to their studio, then I should be good to put it up for sale. And that was the wrong answer, because really when you do, and I can go into a long explanation, but what I've learned is that when you do a taping for a play, you need to have a specific time where you tape a play. You see what I'm saying? It's not like your typical stage play. It would be something different where the audience understands that it's being taped and that it may be some retakes. So, you know what I'm saying, different things like that, so that when you put the product together that it's something that you definitely can use. So
okay,
with that being said, I'm saying that I took it down so it's not for sale right now.
Oh, okay.
Because of the quality.
Now,
not because of the quality of the play, but just because of the quality of the filming.
Oh, okay. Okay. So how do you market the play when you are, you know, when you're out there? How do you market it?
Oh, man, radio, Facebook. Facebook is about the best, too. Word of mouth, flyers, just any and everything. There's a lot of creative things you can do to market. Like, for instance, find a football team or Girl Scout, somebody who's looking for a fundraiser, any group that's more than 10 people, you want to try to get them to sell for you and get people in. There's just so many ways to market, but my main ways will be radio, Facebook, and flyers.
Okay. So You're on Kickstarter.
Yes.
How did you come about to do that?
Well, I had been I knew about Kickstarter, but then there was a friend of mine who's one of my Facebook friends, Monda Webb. You familiar with her?
What did you say her name was again?
Monda Webb.
Monda Webb. No.
Her book is 7:33 a.m.
Oh, okay, I've heard of that book. Yeah.
And she started a Kickstarter project last year, and you know, she was just so excited. She had so much energy going around her project on Facebook, and I was like, "What is this?" So I, you know, not really being that close of a friend to her, I pledged $1 because she was like, "If all of my friends pledge $1." I could make my goal, you know, and her goal was $10,000, but she was, like, already halfway there, and she had 5,000 friends, so she was like, if y'all just give me $1, I'll be there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, well, let me just give my dollar, you know, see what's going on. Well, I just kept checking back to see how close she was, so eventually I went up and bumped that up to $25, and she made her goal. Her goal was $10,000, and she made it at $12,872. I was like, that is kick ass. I'm sorry.
Wow.
You know, that's
yes.
just great to raise that amount of money to be able to put your project on, and that's just basically with the community support, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I had spoken with a project, what is that, a grant writer, because I was thinking, well, African American theaters, you know, or areas and bringing out people who typically wouldn't be going to theater, you know, like the local theater in town. A lot of times they, especially the one here, I can't speak for other places, but I know that the theater that we have here locally does not typically put on shows that are targeted toward the African-American audience.
Oh,
so,
really?
Yeah. And it just,
wow.
Just the state of where it is, and I'm sure if it's like that here, it's got to be plenty of places in America, across America, that don't that do the same. So
mm-hmm.
I was thinking, well, we should be able to get some kind of grant, you know, just
mm-hmm.
on that. And I actually looked on the theater grants and different things like that. But then when I spoke to her, she said, well, the best way to get this type of funding that you need would be to go to the community and let them support it. So that's why we're on Kickstarter, and that's why we're asking the community to support us in any way that they can. And when
mm-hmm.
I say that I don't mind getting a dollar, I appreciate people who give me a dollar the same way I do the ones that give me $100, because I know that everybody does not have it to give it like that. You know what I'm saying?
Right, right.
So I truly appreciate it. Like, I have one person give me a dollar, and I'm like, hey, you know, I'm going to put your website up here and try to get you some help for people to, you know, kick back to you the same way I will for that $100 donor. It's just
mm-hmm.
what it is. So, I mean, and I appreciate every dollar and every person who's backing the project. Right now, we reached our 25th backer tonight, and
mm-hmm.
I think we're like at $859 raised so far, and we got about 27 days to get
oh,
the
okay.
other. Well,
so when is your deadline up in August to what?
It's August the 3rd.
August 3rd.
Yes, and your money doesn't have to be, like, say, for instance, you don't have the money on your card tonight. Well, you can still make a pledge, and you just have to have the money by August the 3rd because that's the day that everything is going to be processed, and that's only if we make the goal of $5,000.
Right. Wow. Well, I'm quite sure you're going to make that goal. I'm going to just... What'd you say, Rhea?
I was asking, has she put fillers out there for the play already? And if so, what has been the reception?
Have I put fillers out there?
Yes.
Like, no, I haven't put any, like this time, I haven't put any, are you saying, like, did I put any snippets out of the cast and different things like that?
Yeah, so have you posted information talking about it anywhere? Just to get, have you gotten any feedback on how anybody is receiving it yet?
Not for this new show, because on the new show we're going to have some new cast members. It's the same play, but we have a new cast. I'm like recasting and getting ready to go with some new energy. But okay. I have gotten, like, only thing I've done is my newsletter and Facebook. And so, yes, I have gotten some feedback, people saying, you know, I want to see you keep going with it. I want to see it keep moving.
Okay.
And, yeah, and then, like, I've gotten some response from the newsletter. It's, a lot of people don't like to pledge and do things online, so they're saying, you know, can I mail it to you? Can I give it to you any other way than doing it online? But from the first play, I can say, you know, last year, once that show was over, my Facebook page was, like, inundated with people who came on saying they enjoyed the show, at least 200 messages from different people on the page.
Wow.
So they enjoyed the show. It's just, like, right now we're in that fundraising phase, and sometimes you don't get as much response when you're doing stuff like that than you do when you're just posting snippets and talking, you know, about the play and stuff like that.
Well, is there anything else that you're doing trying to raise the money, like maybe cabarets and cooking dinners and different
fish
things
fries.
Like that? Because I know. Yeah.
I haven't pulled out the fish yet. But I cook some for dinner tonight. It's Friday. It's tradition. You do it on Friday. But I told my kids today, I was like, hey, I might be buying a bunch of whitening next Friday, and we might be cooking this for fundraising, and they were teasing with me. But, no, I haven't done anything like that. I'm really just going to give this Kickstarter a run for the money. I have some pledges that have been, you know, people who are saying that they will go ahead and pledge and things like that. And it, with 27 days, I really feel confident that we'll make the goal.
Yeah, you're going to make it. Let me ask you this. What authors inspire you to write?
Wow. I can't say any right this moment that are inspiring me, because I have not read a good book, and it's not for the lack of there not being any. I'm reading David Talbert's Baggage Claim right now, but I'm not that deep into the book.
Mm-hmm.
But I've just been so... And I don't know if you can identify with me on this, but once you start, it's different when you're just writing your own book. But once you start assisting others, trying to do something like this playwright Kickstarter, working a full-time job, taking care of a house, it just becomes to the point where you feel like, I'm not that inspired to write right now. You know, I have to carve out some time in a day and say I'm going to write in this. I don't know what it is. When I get on Facebook, I get kind of taken away, I guess, with so many emails and different things that you get on your. So I just haven't been that inspired to write, and I'm trying my best to get back to where I was. But now I can tell you the authors that inspired me to write in the beginning, to write the first two books. It was
okay.
Jane.
And, oh, okay.
But my favorite is Darian Lee. She with that All That in a Bag of Chips series, that one of
five
book series.
Mm-hmm.
That I truly love that book. I like the way her writing style, it got more sophisticated as she wrote that series.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, she inspired me in the beginning. Right now, I won't say that it's another author that would inspire me. It's more so just things that I see and things that I experience that inspire me to write.
Okay. So what are some of the biggest challenges of being a mother and a wife and trying to pursue a career?
It's just trying to juggle it all at the same time. I mean, you know, you have kids and keeping everything in perspective and prioritized, because my full-time job has to come before all the other things that I do, because
mm-hmm.
if I don't have that, then you don't have income to kind of take care of the other things that you need. And then, you know, of course, kids come first, husband, and all of that. So, yeah, it's really, when they say, I was just talking to a friend of mine the other day who has been very helpful with the plays, and her name is Trelease Ware. She's also one of the stars in the play. I was just telling her how, you know, some male performers or producers, directors, it's easier for them to get it going and kickstart whatever it is that their career that they want to do, because if they have a wife to take care of those other duties, like take care of the kids, you know, take them to and from the activities, cook dinner and all of that, then they are freed up with their time to do all of the creative things that they need to do to make it happen. But as women, we have a much, much harder job to do to keep everything balanced and to keep everything going.
I know at one point you was with WagFest. What's become of that, and is it still around, and how did that evolve? And
well,
what was your part in that?
My part, I was the COO, which is the Chief Operations Officer, and basically that was just kind of keeping the operations and the management parts of the things going and helping to plan the events. But we have just decided, Kerry Wagner decided not to do any events right now. I think he's working on some other projects. And so it's not that it may not come together again for a reunion. It's just like right now it's not an event that's in a planning process that I know of.
Okay. Rhea, do you have any questions for Shanae?
No, I'm fascinated about, not fascinated as much as intrigued by her process of bringing her quote unquote goal to fruition more than anything else.
Mm-hmm. Bringing what now?
I don't have any questions. I'm really intrigued by the process that you're using to bring your goal to fruition. You know, even the simple this is the time you mentioned about your friend who the other person who raised the money. That's the second time I've heard of a successful campaign that raised in 5 digits. Money,
right,
asking
right.
Their Facebook friends for the other campaign was for $2,
right.
And they reached their goal, and I think their goal was also $10,000, and I think they reached their goal in about a week and a half.
That's really awesome. Now I found that most of my response is not from just typical Facebook friends. I don't know if I'm not getting the word out to them good enough. But like family and friends are really chipping in. And then some of my Facebook friends that I don't talk to a lot have been chipping in here and there. But I'm going to try to see if I can create an event and maybe get more people to know what's going on, you know, get them hip up on what I'm trying to do and maybe do some videos and different things like that. But I think that this Kickstarter, even out of the other ones that's out there, like Indiegogo, and GoFundMe, Kickstarter is probably, it's just a different, what am I trying to say? It's a different setup than the other ones. Like on Kickstarter, if you don't meet your goal, you don't get any of the money. Period.
Oh, wow.
I mean, yeah, if you get like 4,000, my goal is 5,000. If I get $4,988, my project is unsuccessfully funded, and none of the orders none of the donations get processed. But on Indiegogo, for example, you know, if you make that $4,988, then you would get whatever it is that you raised, except they would take a bigger percentage of it.
Hmm.
So there's a penalty there for not making the money, but at least you get it. You get
a portion. Get something.
I think one of the reasons why I'm intrigued by that other side of it is because I'm a reader, first and foremost, and as a reader, I do find myself vested in that author that exchanges with me, and that we communicate, and it doesn't have to be everyday communication, but that we actually talk or they post things about themselves. The only thing come to mind
Oh, we've lost Bria.
She was just about to start talking.
Yes, she got disconnected. She'll be calling back in. But, in the meantime, you've also started up on your new blog talk show after having your other show, Erotica Gone Wild.
Yes.
So you want to tell us a little bit about your new show?
Yes. I had so much fun on Erotica Gone Wild.
Yes.
My kids are old enough to go and say, Mom, what are you talking about on here? And there, you know, so I can't post that there on my page. Now I said, okay, we'll grow up from the Erotica Gone Wild. Plus, we had fun. It was a time period. But now I said, well, let's do something that's more representative of where I'm at right now. And so
right,
I came up with the idea.
Conservative.
Right. you know, get on and say a few big words. Or no, it's not like that. But we're really laid back. And the name of the show is Almost Famous Life. And basically, that's just where I am right now, along with my co-hosts. We're all trying to get to the point where not necessarily where we're famous, but where we're well-recognized for the work that we do. And so...
How you came up with the title?
Right, Almost Famous. It's like, you know, how people say, oh, you're famous now, you're this, you're that, you know, so I was like, well, almost. Not necessarily. If this is the way famous is, I don't want to be it, you know. You know,
yeah.
A few people recognize you, you're not really paid good. No, I don't want that famous. I'm almost famous. So on the show, we're going to talk to people who are entertainers, musicians, artists, just anybody who's in the creative realm and trying to push their work and get out there and get further. I've already contacted Calvin Richardson. He's one of my favorite singers, and he said that he would come on the show. He's going to check his calendar. So, I mean, those are the caliber of people that we're trying to get on the show, people who are aspiring independent but aspiring to be more well-known for the work that they do.
Okay. Wow, and that show airs in August, next month, right?
Yes, August the 15th. We did a preview show, so if you go to Blog Talk Radio and then put an Almost Famous Life, you'll be able to see our preview show and just kind of give you a little bit about what we're going
to
be talking about.
Right, I listened to the preview show.
I hope you enjoyed it.
I did.
And so then next month we're going to come in live. We have, I think it's Alyssa Gabriel. We have her coming in. I don't have my schedule in front of me, but we have a few guests that's going to be on the first show. And so we're looking forward to the very first show. My co-hosts are Carla Pennington and Naya Moore. So we're excited about that.
Well, I can't wait. So I think Rhea's back. Let's bring her back on. Rhea?
Sorry about that. Didn't even know it had disconnected.
I know.
I bet you
was just talking.
Yeah, because I finished my thought, because I had to close my eyes to finish my thought. And then when I opened, I'm like, they not saying nothing.
I was like, she hadn't said anything the whole show. Then just about when she was about to get going, it went out on.
But briefly, what I was saying, I think I was intrigued by that aspect of your business that I took on. As a reader, I know that I'm more apt to vest in and become vested in an author that engages with me.
Right.
Even though, it doesn't have to be an everyday engagement. I mean, people have lives outside of that. But I think that's what some of the social media has opened up, because it's almost a requirement or an expectation now to be able to, you know, communicate back and forth with some of the authors. And once readers, especially readers that follow particular authors, once they start doing that, they do become vested in the activities of that author. So it makes things a little bit easier to get them to support something in that way.
Right, right. And, you know, it just, you know, it does also help that I'm calling people saying, hey, look, did you go on Kickstarter? Then I email them and say, Kickstarter, Kickstarter, Kickstarter. And they're like, let me get this girl off my back. I mean, I've been Kickstarter. Some of my friends are so tired of hearing Kickstarter, they just went on and made a pledge so that I could stop calling them. So that helps, too.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that's a good point, Rhea.
Yeah.
Pardon me?
I said, that's a good point because, you know, I'm the same way. I'm more, you know, Barack Obama comes on his page, you know, sending me, you get those emails from Barack Obama and his team.
Exactly.
It's kind of keeping you up abreast of what they have going on. He wants to have dinner with you and all this kind of stuff. And before I know it, sometimes I'm already clicking on the $5 donation and making one, you know.
Exactly, so, exactly.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, what was the inspiration behind Secrets of a Kept Woman?
Well, it's just about friendships, and it was about mainly how sometimes we'll just do, especially as women, we'll just do whatever and not necessarily think about that other person's feelings or try to lift them up and put them in a spiritual place where they are better off than they were when they came to you. You know, a best friend who comes to you for advice, sometimes even as best friends, we kind of have this, I guess, this green eye of envy or just different built up things where even our friends, when they leave us, we tear them down with our mouth, you know, or all those different type of things. So I just wanted to talk about friendships. That's why it's about three ladies who've been friends since they were kids. And it's kind of like, how could you do this to a person who has loved you in the way that she has? And so within those three friendships, there's so many different elements. Like one of them is keeping a secret that she's been abused by her husband. That part, the domestic violence, I saw that coming up as a kid. So that's an aspect that I wanted to put in there. Even though some of the people who watched the play, they're like, you know, that's the worst part. That's the only part I didn't like was the domestic violence. I'm like, well, that's probably the most real part that's in the play.
Right.
You have to keep it real because people are going through some things, and, yeah, you want to mask it with a little comedy and, you know, keep it light, but life is not light. So just basically want to talk about some of the things that women go through in friendships and love and in life. And put it all together and make a stage play that can make people feel good at the end and then also, you know, maybe have come to some kind of place where they can deal with what they're going through in their life a little bit better.
Wow. That was very well said. Very well said. Are you planning on doing any other plays or is this it?
No, I do plan on doing another one. Actually, the plan for this year, and this is going to happen, I know we're going to get funded on Kickstarter. Even if we don't, the plan is to take Secrets of a Kept Woman to Memphis, bring it to Atlanta, and then when we come back home, we'll start preparing for a Christmas show here in Opelika. It is going to basically be a spinoff from Secrets of a Kept Woman, but it's called Guess Who's Home for Christmas.
Oh, so are you going to write a book about it first, or are you just going to do a play?
Just going to do a play. I know some of the people who love reading the story, Secrets of a Kept Woman, asked me, is it going to be a book, Guess Who's Home for Christmas? I'm like, no, I don't think I have time to write a whole book by Christmas. But I think we'll just do the stage play, and if all goes well, then, you know, if I'm able to put a book together, it'll be next Christmas.
Well, can you let the listening audience know where they can get your books?
You can get my books on Amazon.com. You can also get them at NayberryPublications.com. You can contact me on Facebook at Shanae Books. That's Shanibooks. You can also find me on Kickstarter, Kickstarter.com, and type in Secrets of a Kept Woman.
Are any of your books on Kindle?
Yes, they all are on Kindle, Nook, and through the website.
Oh, okay, because a lot of people are into the Kindles. I have a Kindle as well, and I love my Kindle, but it has little pros and cons about it. You know, I still do prefer the physical books, you know, but the Kindle is good because you can carry a lot of books around on it, but, you know, when you lose your page, if you accidentally hit a page or something, it's hard to find out where you was at because there are no numbers on the pages, and, you know, it's just little quirks about it, but I do love my Kindle. I think I have Secrets of a Kept Woman. I got to check my Kindle, but I was on the Amazon store picking up books, and I think I do have that one in my little library on my Kindle. I have so many books on my Kindle. Right now I'm reading Savage by, God, what's the girl's
Rashid.
Name? By who?
Is it Rashid?
No, oh, my goodness, her name is on the tip of my tongue. Oh, I can't even. Layla, I think it's Layla. Leela.
Oh, okay.
Leela or Layla Jefferson.
Oh, Leela. Yeah. Leela.
Yeah. Then I've read Simpson, Julia Press Simpson, Begonia. And Fornication, and another book that she put out. But they were all good because I'm getting back into my reading mode because all I've been doing for the last 4 or 5 years is writing, you know, and not reading as much as I've been reading since I got my Kindle. I got my Kindle Christmas of last year.
Mm-hmm.
And I have quite a few books on there that I am reading. I also have a space on my website where it's going to have a featured author, and if you'd like to have any of your books featured, just, you know, let me know, and I'll put it on there and, you know, a little bio and all that kind of stuff to go with it.
Okay.
So, yeah, if you get a chance.
Well, let me ask
also
you a question. Can I ask you a question about the Kindle? Because I have to be the only author who does not own a Kindle.
Oh.
I don't own one. I just didn't get into the Kindle craze. I, you know, have Kindle on my PC, and I've downloaded some books there. But I maybe have 20. But I'm purchasing one of those little an Android tablet from a friend of mine who's selling it. But the Kindle thing, I mean. What I got into was saw Tracy Darity. She had an article out, and I think was a very good article, about readers and whether or not Kindle is really, you know, helping the author as far as building readers who enjoy their work. And, you know, she was, I guess in the article, one of the points she made was that, you know, some people just download stuff into their Kindle just to help the author, but not necessarily planning to read it. You think that?
Oh,
happens?
No, I'm planning on reading all of my books. I plan on reading all of them because I'm having that opportunity now to read them. Because, like I said, within the last 4 years, I was writing, constantly writing. So I really didn't get a chance to, you know, read anybody's books. And
right.
I don't read people's books generally when I'm writing, you know, for myself anyway. So I am going to read those books that are on my Kindle if it takes me from now until. You know, that was my purpose of ordering them.
I was trying to see, like, because I know she said, you know, one of the things she was saying is that especially when they do those free books where you had a free promotions and that, you know, sometimes people get like 3,000 downloads and just want, but very little feedback from the, or follow-up, you know, like, reviews and things like that to let you know that people actually read your book and kind of engagement with the author. So I was just trying to figure out how that works.
Go on, Rhea.
Probably, I'll give it 50-50, but I'm almost I want to say I'm certain that number is higher on the reading side, but I also know people who have a Kindle. Okay, first of all, I never had any intentions on getting a Kindle. My family do not like my friends, and my books are my friends. And my family got together and bought me a Kindle for my birthday in February and thought I was going to get rid of my friends. They were confused. But anyway, they were real confused because they didn't understand me saying I needed a two-bedroom apartment because my friends had to have their own room. So, anyway, and I've downloaded books, okay? Now, some of the – I'm one of them who have 3,000 books on my – no, I have about 1,500. I don't think I've hit 2,000 mark yet.
Wow,
Kindle books.
That's a lot of books.
I don't think I hit 1,000 now that I think about it. But anyway, I downloaded some books to support those authors. But I do plan on reading those books.
Mm-hmm.
I just have a large number of printed books that were already in my queue to read, and I haven't gotten to it. So of the books I've put on my Kindle since February, I've read four. I read two regular books, and then I read two books that I downloaded with my granddaughter for the child. So, but yes, I do know actually quite a bit of people who download books and they have not read them, but I think majority of them do plan on reading.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, because I definitely plan on reading mine because that's why I download them, because it was some very interesting synopsis to these books that I did download. So, and plus I read the little samples that they have up on the website. So I do plan on reading all the books that I have in on my Kindle. You know,
okay.
It may take me a minute, but, you know, like I said, I have read J.C., both of his books, Beast 1 and 2. Like I said, Julie Sims, I read three of her books, Nyla Jefferson, Savage, I'm reading that. I have quite a few authors, you know, in my Kindle. You know, because I love to read. I definitely love to read. So that's not the issue there. I love to read, and I am going to read the books that I did download.
You just got to have the time to do it. I know I have way more books than I can read in the rest of this year.
Right,
I have
right.
more books than I can read.
Uh-huh. But see, like I said, this is the time for me to get my reading in because when I started working on my own personal books, it's going to be, you know, I'm not even going to be able to do that. So I'm, you know, going to be reading as much as I can. But, yeah, so are you going to get a Kindle?
I'm not going to get the Kindle. I'm going to buy this Android. One of my friends is with Five Links. And they sell this Android tablet on there, and she was showing it to me this week, and it has, like, the HD camera on it and a whole bunch of other things, plus, you know, the Kindle is on there.
So
I was going to buy that from her.
The Kindle is Android. It is. It's all, you're right. That serves the same purpose.
Okay. Well, after a while, I will buy that from her and then just go with that, you know, instead of trying to get the Kindle device. And I don't know what all it can do. Does it have a camera on it and different things with the Kindle Fire?
You know, they said it's somewhere that you could take pictures on here, but I really don't know because when I first got it, my grandson was home and he had set it up for me. But, you know, I do know to go on Amazon and get the books off of there, and it's got games on it. You can watch television on it. You can watch movies on it, these different apps and things you can put on it. But the only thing that I've done, I played Angry Birds on it before and, you know, read my books on it. But there's some things that you can do on it. You know, but like I said, I just basically have read my books on it since I've had it and played Angry Birds. Oh, and you can watch YouTube on it, listen to music on it. Yeah.
I basically use mine to play Words with Friends.
mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of things you can.
I can do this.
Wow.
It's a lot of things you can do on it, but, you know, like I said, I'm using it solely for, you know, my books, because I have a lot of books. I have books that teach you things on there as well. When they have those for free, I download them. Then some of them I bought, you know. So, yeah, and I have cookbooks on there. You know, just a variety of books, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, I am going to get around to reading all the books that I have on there. And, you know, the thing I do love about the Kindle is that you have so many books that you can just take around with you. Because if I had to take all them books that are on my Kindle around with me, I'd look crazy, you know.
Right.
So
that's the upside of it, I guess.
Right, right. It has its advantages. Yeah, it does. It has advantages, and then, you know, like I said, but it's nothing like having a book, because you can't autograph, you know, these books. And then if someone wants to borrow your book, but God forbid, I don't loan my books out. But, you know, and then, like I said, when you lose a page or something, it's hard to find out where you were at, because there's no numbers on the pages.
Right.
So, you know, it has its little quirks, but I did appreciate the gift my daughter bought for Christmas. I was really shocked, because I didn't know that she was going to get it for me, you know, and I didn't even remember mentioning it to her that I wanted one. But when she got it, I really did, you know, appreciate it, and I still do. But I still like books.
Yeah, me too. I'd rather have a book.
You know, I'm just wondering what is going to be maybe in the next 10 years. Are all the books going to be obsolete? Or, you know, what's going to happen with that? Because, you know, they closed the bookstores down. And, you know, Amazon is really busy. Amazon is getting a lot of business, you know. So maybe in the next 10, 20 years, books may be obsolete.
Well, I think Amazon is trying to do what Apple did. When Apple came out with their products were only exclusive for use to Apple items. You had to do everything Apple. I think that's what Amazon is trying to do now, because the websites and things that were using and had access to Amazon has removed them. Like Goodreads, you cannot list Amazon as the source for a book to add it to Goodreads anymore.
Wow.
Yeah.
Mm. Oh, really? When you want to add it to Goodreads, what do you list as the source?
To add a book to Goodreads, you have to have certain specifics about the book. And one of the things that they ask you is to put a link in, you know, like a website that you can go to get this book. You can no longer use Amazon. And there are books on Goodreads right now that have a word, I think the word is unconfirmed, by them, because if they weren't confirmed by a certain time, they lost their identity. And another thing that just came out on Facebook last week, there's a clause in Amazon. Once you post a review on Amazon, they own it. You don't own your review anymore.
Wow.
So they can come back and say something. They can come back if you post that review anywhere else. Because you had several authors that were angry because they found out that, quote, unquote, they're illegally posting reviews on their website.
Oh, whatever.
Wow.
And I'm like, Amazon needs to go sit down, because they're going to run people away from them. And so I think they're trying to do that monopolistic type of atmosphere, and they don't realize that Nook sales have been going up.
Right. I mean, it's almost like, and they're doing it unapologetically. They know exactly what they're doing, especially when they eased in with that, because it started off with where authors can go on and, you know, download the books, make them available on Kindle. And I actually was one of the authors who benefited from not being a household author, you know, with a traditional publishing company, and being able to reach some of the same people. It seemed like Amazon was advertising the books, And I was selling way more than I had ever sold without, you know, having to go out to a million signings in a month and, you know, speak to everybody that I knew, handing out cards and stuff like that. So I was actually getting more sales. But then they came along with different things that seemed to be driving down the book price. And I don't know if it was because more authors were coming along and some were selling their books for 99 cents. And it just came to a point where, you know, to ask for $2.99 for your book seems to be a lot. You know what I'm saying? Where there's so many, they went from being able to price them at $2.99 and get good sales. And this is just for me. I can't speak for other authors. But there's some who are still doing very well with the Kindle. And then to the point where now we're offering books for free for people who have Kindles. You know,
mm-hmm.
Do you want to get in on this program?
Several of the authors were complaining because they didn't know that their book was going to be offered free. And all of a sudden they see, they'll get a report that says that they done sold, that they sold 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 books, but they don't get anything off of any of those sales.
Yeah.
And their profit is so minimum already that, you know, it's like, really? They
It's like you've already accepted the lowest of the barrel, and then now they want to hit you with something else.
Exactly.
Well, they want to offer their customers who buy Kindles. Now, mind you, they've already made at least $80 off of the Kindle. So now they want to offer them something for free, and it just so happens to be your book that you wrote without your consent or whatever. So now they're like, okay, we've come up with this grand idea that we're going to put $600,000 in a pot. And if you will offer your book for free to customers, then you will get part of this pot. And it just depends on how many downloads happen per month. So you have no actual anything sound to go on as far as how much you will make per book, which from what I've read, people have come out pretty good. I guess it's somewhere like $1, $1.50 per copy per download. But what I don't like about it is it's like almost like training readers to think that books should be free.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Because once they get so many free books and you come and you want to ask them to buy one, it's almost like, why should I? Because I know that there'll be another pile of authors that I can choose from next month that'll be putting their books on for free.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So I don't know. It's just, it's one thing that it seems like it's good for authors in the conversation, but at the end of the day, I don't know if it will be in the long run.
Yeah, well, I haven't even gotten my books on Kindle yet. I tried to format it myself, and it was a hot mess. I had it up there for a minute, then I said, oh, no. So I have to find out how to do the formatting to get it on there. Did you put your own on there, Shanae?
Yeah, I put them all on there, and I use Word to format them.
Right, that's what I did. I followed everything because I got the little book and everything, but for some reason when I went on and because I had to buy my own book to see how it looked, and I said, oh, no, this wasn't how the directions said to do it. You know, it didn't come out the way the directions had said to do it. And I did it to the directions, but maybe it was something that I wasn't doing. I don't know. But
yeah. You got to take all of the, any of the formatting that you had in there for the print copy, you have to take that out for the Kindle copy.
Oh, yeah, so I got to figure that out. So once I figure that out, then I guess I'll put my books on there. But, you know, I'm still going to have them on Amazon, the regular books, too, you know, because a lot of people that I know don't have the Kindle. You know, and some people are not really interested in the Kindle because they like books, you know. So I don't know, but I'll see how that works. Because they had this one guy, he sold 1 million books, 99 cents. And they also had this Millionaire's Club on Kindle. I had read that somewhere where people sell 1 million books for 99 cents.
Mm-hmm. and you get 30% of that, so that's $300,000. But the question is, I mean, it's like magic. How do you make those get those numbers to work? I mean, what are they doing to push that out? Amazon is doing something to help people get that kind of advertisement, unless mm-hmm. that person is doing radio. You know, it's something in the algorithms on how they get these books to pop up and be promoted on their site.
Well, I can part with a little bit of information for both of you all.
Okay.
One of the things that Amazon is also doing is, okay, there's a like button down, I think, next under the author's name to the right a little bit. When that like, the books who have the most likes get the first, get moved up to the, what is the word, in rotation. That's the only word I can think of.
Mm-hmm.
So authors have been asking their readers to go back, go through and like all their books. And that moves them up into the rotation. So they get automatic advertisement, let's put it like that, from
right.
Amazon. Because of the number of people that they are bringing to visit the Amazon site. It's almost like that's one of their ways of recording that you come to their site.
It's their way of kind of rewarding you as well.
Say it again.
Is that like a reward for you to come?
Exactly.
I mean, for you having so many people that came to Amazon for just for you, and they like, because the one thing I do is I like every book that I could, you know, go to. I just do that just to help the author with promotions. You know,
exactly.
I go, when
and,
I go to somebody's page,
them,
I just like it.
You know how when you open up Amazon and you see certain books sitting there, those
mm-hmm.
books, that's how they get there. That's how, because some readers do go to Amazon and they just look, and the books that they see, they are the ones that they will read the synopsis and then buy and things like that. If they're not going there, they go to Amazon and shop just like you go to the store and shop and you just look. And one of the ways that Amazon is putting you up in the feeds where your book is being posted is the books with the most likes.
Oh, okay.
So
I knew it was there for a reason. I didn't know exactly,
exactly.
why. Now I know.
Exactly. But that's the same thing with the Internet. When people, okay, like, you know how you do a search on something, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you get, I think it's like 12 or 13 things on the first page. Then you have to go to page 2 and then 3 and 4, whatever the thing. The people on that first page are the ones who have had the most people visiting their website.
Or the most
wow.
people typing in their Google and their
exactly.
trying to Google.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
But the catch to that, if you the author is typing in, they actually have somebody who monitors the IP addresses. So if you study typing in your own stuff from your same IP address, you will get they'll block you. They actually send you a warning. And then they'll take you off of the feed. At least I know Google will.
Mhm.
Wow.
Okay. Well, that's good information.
Yeah.
It's always good to know. I mean, I knew, like I said, I knew that like button was there for a reason.
Exactly.
I thought it was just so when people came to your page that they would see that other people liked it. But now I know, I'll be saying, hey, push that button when you go over there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Now, anytime I read a book, I automatically, if I liked it, I liked the like button, period. And some of my favorite authors, I took a Saturday when I wasn't doing nothing. I was crocheting and liking.
Okay.
And I went through, and my favorite authors, I liked their books. And because you have to go to each individual book to hit the like button, you can't do a mass like or whatever. So I was sitting there crocheting and liking, and I did it, just spent like a Saturday morning several hours going through and doing that.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're getting down to the wire. I think we have less than 5 minutes, and I want to say I appreciate you coming on, Shanae. And, you know, I wish you well in all your endeavors, and you are going to meet your goal in August with the Kickstarter. And hopefully you'll bring your play up this way to the DMV.
So. That would be awesome.
Yes,
maybe I'll try
would.
To make that festival that they have down there. They do something similar to this festival that's going to be going on in Atlanta, where they have a certain amount of plays and a certain amount of days. And maybe I'll be able to make that next year.
Oh, okay. Or at least the next time you get it on DVD, you know, I can get it. Or even I may just come to Alabama. Who knows?
Okay. Uh-oh.
You know?
Now, that'll be,
who knows?
That'll be awesome. Delicious in Alabama.
Yeah, so it was definitely a pleasure to have you on, and the listening audience out there, look out for Shanae's show next month, Almost Famous Life, on Blog Talk Radio. What time does it air, Shanae?
It's going to air at 9 p.m. Central Standard Time. So that's
on
at
what day?
10 o'clock. It's on Wednesday.
Wednesday, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and that's 10 o'clock Eastern Standard Time.
Yes, it's going to be August the 15th at 10 o'clock. Eastern Standard Time, and we're going to air every Wednesday from that point on.
Okay. All righty then. So, like I said, I appreciate you coming on, and, you know, like I do wish you the best. And, Bill, you have any closing remarks for Shanae?
It was a good interview. I enjoyed myself, but I usually do.
Thank you. Thank y'all for having me.
Yeah, and, you know, like I said, you're going to get that money. There's no doubt about it. Claim it, name it, and it's yours.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
Yeah. And come back anytime, and I'm looking forward to your show when you air the 15th of August.
Okay, and I just want to say in my final words, if you're listening to the show, just go to Nayberry Publications and check out the information that I have on there about the Kickstarter, and that's Nayberry, N-A-Y-B-E-R-R-Y, not named after Mayberry. Rest in peace, Andy. We're going to miss you. I'm going to be watching some TV Land tomorrow. Hopefully they'll have some Andy Griffith Show reruns on there, but the website is not my nickname was Nayberry in high school, and it has nothing to do with Mayberry.
Right. I had put it up in the chat room, but I had left the S off. I first put it Nayberry Publishing, then I put Nayberry Publications, then finally Nayberry Publications.com.
It is
in the chat room. So I want to give a shout-out to the guests and the people that stopped by, Miss Kane, Tammy, Almost Famous Life, which is Shanae, Fish 9 Bark, and a few guests that also stopped by. Everybody have a wonderful weekend. Stay hydrated. Stay out of the sun, the heat as much as you can. Look out for your neighbors that are elderly, and, you know, don't let your kids be out in the sun too much, because this is just terrible, terrible heat going on. We had heat advisories all week long, and you know, like, I really like talking to you guys. I don't like to talk about you. So, you know, take care of yourself. And, Rhea, I'll get in touch with you when we're having what's going on with the next show. And, Shanae, you have a beautiful evening. And thanks again for coming on, darling.
Oh, you too. Thank you.
Okay. Good night, everybody. night, everybody.